alive.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI. Welcome back. Nice to be back, but glad our time was used so well last week. Dealing with the tragedies in Haiti. While we're talking about it, let me make a small announcement. Long Island University in Brooklyn is holding a special whole day conference on the 23rd of February. 22nd, it says 23rd. I'm sorry, the 23rd of... Here we go. So anyway, it's a whole day conference. We'll get the answer to you about that in a moment. I think it's the 23rd. And it's about, it's on a Monday, I know. And it's about a, it's a conference and I'll be participating in it. I'll get you information on it tomorrow. So be sure to stay tuned. And today we're going to take you on a journey. It started off a little awkwardly today. We're taking you on a journey. A journey about love. This is a different one about love, different than you've heard before. Today I want to talk about abandonment rage. Isn't that a good bunch of questions? Abandonment rage. What is abandonment rage? Abandonment rage. It's what happens when a person feels abandoned by their partner. And they not only get depressed, because, you know, a lot of people get very, very depressed when a love relationship breaks up. And they get very upset. Other people will, some people will even commit suicide. You know, in Japan, a suicide that is over a love suicide, the Japanese even glorify the act. They call it a love suicide, and they call it an honorable statement of the ultimate of one's devotion. The biggest sign of a devotion that you have in a love relationship is to kill yourself. Right? Okay. Attempted love suicide may have even been adaptive in ancestral times. Many suicidal people, largely women, fail to actually kill themselves. Many misjudge their tactics. Suicide is unquestionably maladaptive. It's not an idea, but, you know, we have to look at it. We have to look at this idea that love can create such passion that is can make somebody either become homicidal, suicidal, depressed, like you want to walk out on the ice, you know? It's such a... such a severe thing. I didn't know that's what love was supposed to do. I didn't know that that was the deal. From the Americas to Siberia, thousands of people have left lyric memories of this heartache. They've written poetry. An Aztec Indian left these melancholy words in the 16th century. He said, "Now I know why my father would go out and cry in the rain." It was because of love. A Japanese poet once wrote, "And now I know," let me see, what was that a quote from him? "I look at the hand you held, and the ache is hard to bear." And then St. Vincent Millay wrote these wrenching lines, "Sweet love, sweet thorn, when lightly to my heart, I took your thrust, whereby I since am slain, and lie disheveled in the grass apart, a sodden thing betrenched, bedwrenched by tears and rain." So this stuff of love. Doesn't it make you feel weird about love itself? What do you want to go do that for if the cost is such, so deep? There's a Chinese woman who said, I can't bear life. All my interests in life have disappeared. I was lonely and really sad, and I cried. I stopped eating and didn't sleep well. I couldn't keep my mind on work. Polynesian person. She said about how all of life is gone now with my love. Well, my friends, what is this all about? Is it what they call dependency? What is it? What makes this happen? What's the chemistry of love that's so enormous that the abandonment or the severing of it creates such a severe reaction? What do we do here? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Our specialty is psychotherapy, meaning helping people. The therapy of the mind, whatever that is, however you do it. The majority of people who have come to see us have seen us used to be as a reaction to a lost relationship. Nowadays, I don't see that as frequently. I do see depression. I do see people coming in for depression, but it's not as a result of the lost relationship. But there are those who lose a relationship and give up and die on the inside. But then there's another reaction which we want to understand, which is, this is the most incredible, and every one of you I know have felt it at some point or other. Almost every one of you. Any one of you who really felt that love was important, that you cared more about your connection. Now, independent, solitude type of people, they rarely make that kind of connection. But if you have a connection and it gets so deep, you get the richest part of love, the most it has to offer, the juices that flow, the chemicals that rage through your brain. It's really beautiful. It's exquisite. Sex is wonderful. Love is wonderful. Touch is wonderful. Everything is wonderful. But then the very same person who you have this with could become rageful. Now, I've known men and women who have been with each other, and the man will talk about his girlfriend, who may be putting him through a ringer for one reason or another. And he talks about how he needs her, he loves her, and he hates her. And man to man will say, I hate her. I just can't stand her. I know I can't get out, but I hate her. And they'll admit their hatred to each other. I've seen men, and I've tried to get men to talk about this, because most men who are depressed are denying this aggressive feeling that they have towards the person who's pushing you away. Well, it only makes sense. If somebody has food for you, and in this case food may be nurturance or love or holding your hand or making you feel safe, and then they pull it away from you, of course you're going to get angry. Try doing that to a dog or a cat. You know, try doing it to an alligator. Here's a little fish for you. They're going to take it away from you. Right? They're going to get angry. They're not going to want to be played with like that. So there seems to be a primitive instinct, something inside us, that says when love is withdrawn, we feel a certain feeling that's a reaction. Now, if you're not comfortable with anger, if you're somebody who's always turned anger on yourself, I guarantee you, you will not feel rage. You'll just turn it against yourself, and you talk to yourself about how bad you are, how lonely you are, how depressed you are, and you'll feel like you deserved it. You'll question yourself in relationships, and you'll be depressed. But if you're somebody who is comfortable with anger, who expresses anger when they feel anger, that's a different story. I think you're more likely to connect with these angry feelings. So we have questions about it. In the studio with me today, Stephanie Dombra. We've been looking at this today, and we've been trying to figure the, let me see. Are you there? Yes. Hey, Stephanie, welcome back today. I see our microphones are moved around, too. It's been a week.
Hi, Armand. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you. We're in. Hey, Steph. let's talk about suicide. Let's talk about the difference. Murder. The extreme of it. You kill someone out of love. They call it a crime of passion. Now, crimes of passion are very, very interesting because according to the legal, and I'm not a lawyer, but according to legal definition, there's homicide, right? And then there's manslaughter. And manslaughter, they should call it person slaughter, is when there is no premeditation. You don't think about it in advance. You do it on the spot. Now, when they're investigating crimes of passion, that means you caught him cheating and you hit him over the head with a frying pan and he died. Right? Now, the question the lawyers ask or the prosecuting attorney will ask was, well, did you have enough judgment in there to say to yourself, I don't have a choice? Because they describe crimes of passion as a form of temporary suicide. No, I'm sorry, temporary insanity. If a crime of passion, which is hitting your boyfriend over the head with a frying pan when you catch him cheating on you, or any other extreme, is considered temporary insanity, is therefore abandonment rage a form of temporary insanity? That's our question. We had to go to the anthropologists. We had to go to understanding something about the chemistry. Stephanie, what do you understand about it?
Well, I'm sure that when two people are really bonded, and once again we talk about all these lovely chemicals that flow and you're attached. As you said, they even did a study with kittens and cats. If you take away that substance, let's call it the love and the attention, you get angry. Now, again,
So who's the you?
The person who's been left.
Behind.
Okay, and I have to assume that a lot of different people have different ways of responding to things. So some might be very mild in their response to that. Other people who probably are generally able to be angry and express just go to the 10th degree, I imagine, that kind of rage. And the judgment is gone. I think your brain is hijacked at that level. When you call it temporary insanity, all judgment is gone. You're just doing impulsive behavior at that point.
And you're desperate. You don't know what to do. You say to yourself, I'm not going to call. And you call. And you get dissed because you know she's not answering the phone or he's not answering the phone. Maybe he's with somebody else, so you call again. You swear you're not going to call. And you keep on redialing and redialing and redialing. I think that's why we were better off with those old dials you used to have to turn. Remember the phones you used to have to turn?
They're called rotary.
Rotary dials. Remember rotary dials?
Rotary, yes.
Yeah, because you'd break your finger by the time you kept calling back so much. The redial wound up being the easy way, but it invites the compulsion. And the compulsion is aggression. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And then you wind up showing at their doorstep. You stalk them. Do any number of things. All of this is abandonment rage. And it's part of what happens. I've known some really good people who have been mates to someone who has abandonment rage. Now, how does that happen? Well, here's the way it works. If you're a really good person, then it means you're probably somebody who is kindly. And you're kindly. And what do you attract? Generally, a kindly person will attract somebody who's an aggressive person. It usually happens. Kindly people attract somebody with very strong needs. Now, the person with the very strong needs loves being with the kindly person, and they are the aggressor, and you are usually passive aggressive, usually not as quick to express your anger. And then that aggressive person, when you leave them, all of that rage and fury that they had as part of their beautiful dynamic character turns against you. And it is murder. It is big. It is so big that they want to hurt you. And not only want to hurt you, but just plain hate you. Hatred. An emotion that we don't believe in. An emotion that is not really an emotion. It's almost like a reaction. What is hatred? Anger is one thing. Hatred is this incredible thing. How many women and men do you know who are very hateful? There's a condition in psychiatry called the borderline personality disorder. It's characterized by constant rage and hatred. It's called outward rage from the pain within. This is a person who lives with the kind of personality who has so much torment on the inside that it almost comes out as rage. Now, I'll give you an example of this. If you're a wounded animal, and let's say you're wounded, let's say you're hurt, let's say you hurt your liver in passing or something happened to you, and you're trying to get through life, and you know that you're vulnerable to other animals, what do? You make loud sounds that sound vicious. If you ever see a dog that's been hurt, you see the dog is barking and it looks really rabid. He looks like he could hurt you because he's trying to keep you away. The cornered rat who will hiss, the cat who will kind of strike at you. Wounded animals tend to use rage as their defense. Well, interesting concept. Abandonment rage. Does that mean that we are wounded animals who fall to a primitive part of us that is going to turn our wound on you with an aggression? Well, what's the idea? You know, with the animal, the idea is that I'm going to be rageful until I repair myself. I'm going to try to keep everything at a distance until I repair myself. Is that what's going on? Is that what is going on? Is the best technique for a person who is with someone who has abandonment rage, let's say you woke up one day and you said, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm saying goodbye to that person. You know? Let's say you went to enough meetings, you learned enough about abuse, you learned enough about all the things that you were doing to perpetuate a negative relationship, and you finally said, I tried everything I can, the best thing I'm going to do is get out of this relationship. And you get out of the relationship, and the next thing you know, the person turns against you. They stalk you, they hunt you down, they call your family, they do everything, they interfere with your life, they call your boss. They just are going to hurt you one way or another. Well, if the theory is true that abandonment rage is an attempt to recover from a wound by putting out a vicious exterior, then the answer should be that you, as a person who may be the victim of it, have it coming in your direction, the best thing you could do is not respond. It's like in general to all bad things that come in your direction. When something comes at you with such an enormous intensity that stays within legal boundaries. Of course, if it's outside of legal boundaries and they do things that are illegal, you call the police, you get a distance. But sometimes you just got to let it die. You got to look at the other person and say, boy, was I wrong in choosing you? You have to say to yourself, I made a mistake and I chose you, but now I'm done with you and I know you've got to go through this. So I'm not going to answer your calls. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to have meetings with you. I'm not going to go with your pleadings. I'm not going to get involved. That's the best bet. Some people, of course, in their anger, do funny things. Some people actually kill with it. You know, we were looking at different forms of homicide, and there are some different ones. Stephanie was doing some research on this. Stephanie, did you ever hear of satoricide?
Wait a minute. Which one was that, Armand?
Satoricide. It's a saroticide. As in
Sororicide. Sororicide. S-O-R-O.
R.
R.
I. C-I-D-E. Sororicide. How many of you know of sororicide and would like to have committed sororicide in your life?
Killing your sister.
That's what it means. It means killing your sister. Sororicide. How about matricide? That seems pretty obvious, right? You're killing your mattress?
Killing your mother.
That's your mother, patricide?
Your father.
Okay, here's a good one for you. I bet you don't know what uxoricide is.
Would you like me to tell you, Armand, and the audience?
Yeah.
Killing your wife.
Killing your wife is uxoricide. But we don't...
O-X...
UX.
UXORICIDE.
Parricide. PARR.
I'm not sure about that one, actually.
Yeah, patricide is father.
Here, I'll find out.
I bet parasite is dad. Well, I bet it is
father.
Dad. Father, parasite, yes. How, genocide? We know what that is.
Okay, it is one's father, mother, or near relative, a parasite.
Yeah,
P-A-R-R-I-C-I-D-E.
You know the one thing we don't have, Stephanie? We don't have one for when you kill a lover. We don't have one of a kind of homicide. They call that a crime of passion. A person commits a crime, especially assault or murder, against someone because of a strong impulse such as jealous rage or heartbreak, rather than a premeditated crime. Love. Such a funny thing, love. Such a funny, funny thing, love. Rejection. The attempt to win back one sweetheart, a craving for him or her. You know, the separation anxiety once they pull away. Now, you know, there are periods in people's lives, men's and women's, when they go through certain physical changes that have nothing to do with the other person. It may be menopause. And during that time, a number of different things could happen to you that make you turn on your mate. What happens, Steph?
Well, I believe that, you know, for women, and I can speak about myself too, we go through different cycles through our menstrual cycle. So we're going to feel closer when we're kind of gearing up for the ovulation period, because that's designed beautifully for that mate, partner up. So you want to get closer to your partner. The second half of the cycle, you want to distance yourself. And so it's related to your hormones. The more estrogen, the more you want to nurture and connect. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you view it, menopause, if your estrogen is dropping, sometimes you want to disconnect from your partner. And obviously that has a lot of consequences, but that is one thing that could happen. If you don't feel connected, that could cause the other person to feel very angry.
So here you are, a husband and wife, right? And somebody goes through, a woman goes through menopause, and she starts feeling disconnected from her husband, at which point she starts picking on all his weaknesses and bringing them out and mentioning them over and over again. But he loves his wife. He wants to stay with her. What does he do? I'll tell you what he does. He hates her. He just hates her. And he kind of says, I'm going to go through this. But it's like being with somebody who's sick. You know, I'm not calling menopause sickness, but it's like if you're with somebody who's ill, who's really ill, and you have to nurse them to health, or you're nursing them while they're ill, someone has cancer. You know, many mates of people who have cancer hate their partners. You hate the sick person. You say, when you ask them, do you hate your sick partner? They say, no, I hate the cancer. No, the truth is you hate the person for being sick because they're pulling love away from you. In fact, when people die, how's that for abandonment? When you're being abandoned when somebody dies, one of the primary stages of going through a death with someone is being able to recognize and acknowledge your own anger and rage. Because you get angry at the person who died. It makes no sense whatsoever, does it? How could you get angry at somebody who dies? Well, you do. Because they left you. So if you have rage itself, it's very expensive. Metabolically, talk about metabolism. It stresses the heart. It raises blood pressure. It suppresses the immune system. So this whole idea of getting disempowered by the loss of love, you know, many people lose. Like a men, you know, men who have a wife who dies. That's a form of abandonment, right? And then they die like a year later or 6 months later. How many cases you see of it? One of the things it has to do with is the rage, the suppressed rage. One of the things we do in therapy, if we're doing a talk therapy, one of the ways they usually treat this, if a person has an unusually long depressed reaction to the death or abandonment by someone else, sometimes they medicate it. And some of the SSRIs, those drugs, they lift the person up off the ground. And sometimes when it's really serious, like when they have a suicidal depression, that may be one of the only ways. But the other way that we do is we talk to them about identifying and feeling the rage that they have inside. And when they talk about the rage and they start to identify the anger they feel towards the abandoning partner, they start coming out of their depression. And I've seen it hundreds and hundreds of times because that's what I do. A guy named John Bowlby, that the anger that accompanies the loss of a loved one is nature's biological design to regain the lost person. He said, no, your rage is meant to somehow grab that person. But, you know, as I think about it, rage doesn't make anybody come back to you. Maybe they get scared and they come back to you, but then they're always looking to leave. If a rejected person has produced babies during the bankrupt partnership, abandonment rage may give them the energy to fight for the welfare of the child. You know, but it doesn't always mean you're going to win a person back. In fact, it's quite the opposite. You're not going to win them back. This is Armand Miller with you, with a positive mind. We're talking about love. It's so confusing, my friends. Hey, tomorrow we have a two-hour special here at WBAI. Now, it begins the marathon. Now, I need two things from you, my friends. I will make you a special offer tomorrow as a premium. We're offering a consultation with me personally or with Sherry Siegel. This is going to be a very interesting thing, but you could do that. This is a discounted way of getting to talk about your love. So you can wait till tomorrow. Don't call today. Call tomorrow. During the fun drive is between 1 and 3 o'clock. And tomorrow we're talking about anhedonia. Yes, little anhedonia. She lives down the block. No, anhedonia. It's one word. Anhedonia means the inability to experience joy. It comes as a result of a lot of physical, neurological, psychological syndromes. It could be any number of things that could create this. You know it in yourself, or you know people like this, people who can't experience joy. It could be depression, but it's not only depression. There's a number of other sources. So if you're somebody who's familiar with this, be sure to tune in tomorrow at 1 p.m. on WBAI as we talk about this. Today, we're talking about rage. And we're going to take your telephone calls after the radio show, after the break that we're going to play. And in fact, we should call Ken and ask him. We're going to take a break. We're going to play a little music. And then we're going to come back to you with more talk about this, including your phone numbers, your phone calls. Your phone calls will be at 212-209-2900. Now it's hard. Am I doing the break? It's hard to really figure whether or not you have got to, what the pain that you're going through is something that is automatic. You know, is it automatic or is it something that is, hold on a second. We have new engineering and new since we haven't been with you. But what'll it be, Stephanie?
You are.
I am. Ah, that's what I thought. Good. Good. Certainly happy. One special thanks to Ken Gale for helping us out today because we had a sudden switch in our program. So we're going to take a short break. When we get back, your telephone calls, 212-209-2900. We're going to play something for you that's different as well. In fact, this is Armand Miller, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It is 129. In New York. Here's a little something for you.
Hate is the kind of hate that I have for you.
My hate for you is such a hot hate. I hate you with hot, heaping hunks of hate.
The heat of your hot hate could not approximate the hateful hatred that I have in hating you.
If it was possible to write the word hate on each grain of sand in the Sahara Desert, all that hate on each of those hateful grains would equal 1/1,000,000th of the hate I'm hating you with right now.
You know how much you're hating me?
Yeah.
Double it. That's my hate for you.
I used to love you. Now I hate love.
How long have you hated me?
2 years.
I've hated you 4 years.
I hated you before I met you.
I hated you before you were born.
I hate your grandmother.
I hate Columbus for discovering America and making it possible for me to meet and hate you this way.
The word hate isn't big enough to hold my
hate
for you.
The gestures of hate.
Because I hate
in this world, not only in this world, go out into space, go out
of your body
into the universe, in the Milky Way, go up into Jupiter, into Mars. All the
hate
they have up there will not approximate the
hateful
hatred I have for you.
That's what I hate you with.
I'd like to ask one question.
What?
Do you think this marriage can be saved?
Hi there. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I've always enjoyed that. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
I appreciate the show. I wanted to share with you my own personal experience that I was in that situation you're describing many years ago, back in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
My experience was I was in love with this woman. Right, the sex was great, the hormones are flowing, everything's happening. But my experience was one of being in love, and what that was loving myself and connecting with my higher values and virtues and living in that way and having that almost spiritual religious experience, you might say.
So you didn't want to kill her?
Well, the rest of the story goes, I found out that she had been sexually abused by the pastor in her church, and when we tried to address it, the whole thing got shut down, and they said, you can't come on this property. We'll have you arrested for just talking about this.
Hmm.
And what they did is they took their own internal shame and criticism and projected it on me and said, you're angry. You just want revenge. And my intention the whole time was simply for love and healing and reconciliation because I recognized how she had been carrying this shame and guilt around her own abuse. So they saw me as rageful and stalking and this crazy guy, yet my intention from my experience was one of wanting love and reconciliation and clarity and honesty and healing. So it was a very interesting thing, and I'm curious as to your take on this and what do you think of that?
Well, when you look at it from a distance, what do you feel looking back then? Do you feel that your energy could have triggered this reaction?
My energy, certainly my energy was an integral part of that whole thing. Looking back on it, there's great sadness because I saw a missed opportunity, an opportunity for exactly that, a greater actualization of love and healing and connection. And so sadness is one of the main feelings.
Yeah, so it gets very difficult, you know, and people get involved, you know. One of the things about separation is that when you get other people involved in the middle, which I'm sure you tended to do, did you have people that you were confiding in?
At that time, not. I didn't actually have a whole lot of other support because I was gotten so involved with her and her congregation, which wasn't necessarily my faith tradition. It was a Methodist congregation, but good people, and I connected with them around basic human values, and so I got involved with that community. So it was really just the loss of a community as well as that relationship.
Yeah, I hear. Well, there's not much more I could say to you about it.
Well, I wanted to share this with you, too. You know, you interviewed Marshall Rosenberg a while back.
Yes, I know
and
Marshall.
And I'm a big fan and practitioner of nonviolent communication. I heard you say then later on that the problem with NVC is it doesn't work. And I really wish you would have addressed that with him. Because, you know, this whole idea...
Well, you know, the truth of it is I try to, and he won't come on the radio. In fact, he won't answer any phones.
Really? Well,
have you spoken to him?
And having that conversation, because what drives me is this desire for mutual understanding and a shared reality, and to support and encourage one another to be fully actualized.
Have you? I'm going to ask you a question. Have you been in touch with Marshall Rosenberg at all?
Yeah, I took a workshop with him, and I've seen him.
When was that?
When the last time might have been 2007.
Perhaps. Yeah, that's the trouble. I've been trying to be in touch with him as well, and I found a very interesting thing that I've been trying everything to communicate with him, and they told me at his office that nobody communicates with him any longer. Hmm. So I found that.
Hmm.
I found the idea of nonviolent communication. Boy, that's the ultimate nonviolent communication. So I've been trying. I've left messages to have him call me back. We wanted to have him on the program again to try to clear up some of those issues.
Well, I would be very happy, either now or in the future, to please, I would really find great joy.
See if you can create the bridge. You know the guys over there. Call them up. Say Armand DeMille wants to speak with him, even though they told me they won't even take a message.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel quite confident in speaking from that.
I thought
that
the message was really good, and I thought the process was very good. I recommend the book to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but often it leaves out a lot of passions.
A lot of passions.
Yeah.
Well, and would you be willing to elaborate on that? Because I really think
I can't do that now because
okay.
I would do a whole show on
sure.
that. And
right.
I would love to do a whole program on that.
Would you be willing to have me on? I would love to engage that conversation with you. I really would.
Well,
I
maybe so. Send me a note about it, and let's take a look.
Okay. Thank you very much, Armand.
Thank you.
Keep up
sure.
the great work.
What's your name?
Well, my name's Ken.
Ken.
Yes,
thank
Ken
you.
Ken from Long Island, from Massapequa.
Ken from Long Island, Massapequa.
Yeah.
My favorite places. Hi, 212-209-2900. Did we learn, Stephanie? It was the 22nd, right? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
And I listen to you all the time. You're like a port in the storm. I mean, you're wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Thank you.
What you're talking about now, I'm 100% going through it. My boyfriend of 30 years is absolutely going through abandonment rage because I'm leaving him.
Mm-hmm.
In November of 2006, our only 23-year-old son committed suicide
oh.
in my home in front of his little sister, who is 9 years old. So I know my son had abandonment rage because his father was never there for him. I raised him with my mother and my father until he was 7. And then he went through a rage. Then at 7, we had to take him to the hospital. He never came out of it, Armand. He went into a deep depression. He had a valvular disease in his heart, severe asthma. And at 18 years old, he turned to drugs to numb his pain. So maybe he felt abandoned by me, but I always let him stay with me. Now I'm being evicted from my home. They've taken my 12-year-old daughter into kinship foster care. She told me on the phone last night about her paternal aunt, this man's sister, who's very wealthy, that she can't take her anymore. She's crying every night to be with me. We are extremely close, and they're using my long-term depression as a weapon against me in the court, in the family court, and I don't even have a competent lawyer, but this man...
Well, I know, I was thinking about somebody I know who you could probably consult with.
A lawyer?
Well, she's more than a lawyer. She works in the family courts, Shreya Mandel.
Could you spell her name?
I'll tell you what. Get in touch with my office. And we'll
I can't. I have no computer. I'm so
you don't
poor.
Have a telephone?
I have a telephone.
Call my office.
What is it?
212-757.
212-757. 757.
4488. I want to put you in touch with somebody who may.
4488. Armand, I also like to say that I went through menopause, and it's really tough, you know, and I don't know if it affects my depression. And I told this to my boyfriend, and last week he raped me, not here, and he then calls me back yesterday, and then he tells me he loves me. He's not capable of admitting anything he's done to me or his children, and he still is allowed to see his 12-year-old daughter. He's also a severe alcoholic. He tells me in this, like, moody voice when he's drunk, don't ever ask me to stop drinking alcohol, because I never will.
Okay, let's stop right here. What's your name?
Susan.
Susan.
I'm shaking.
Yeah, listen.
Just to have the courage to
let
call
me put
you.
A big arm around you for taking the courage to call.
I'm scared.
Yeah, you're living in a world that is so dysfunctional. Everything around you is kind of not real.
I'm also being evicted.
Yeah. So let's see what we could do. You call and tell them you want to get in touch with Shreya.
I doubt she'll
and
talk
I'll,
to me.
I'll take it from there. She will talk to you. She's a friend of mine.
212-757-4488.
Yeah.
Remember what you were saying about the hunting and the stalking and the telephone calls? What about the court cases? What about the meetings we have to go to? I don't want to go to them with him.
It's all the same. You need a representative. Let's find you somebody who could talk to you, okay?
Okay, on
thank you so much, Susan.
Okay, I love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boy, it's real tough. So let's take another call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls related to abandonment rage. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Paula, and I listen to your show all the time at work.
Hey, Paula, how did you know I was going to be on today? Didn't you miss me last week?
Yes, because there was like a fundraiser. Somebody else.
Not last week. Last week we had, we were doing the Haitian community and trying to deal with them. Oh, by the way, before I get off the air, the aftermath of the Haitian earthquake is what's represented at Long Island University Brooklyn campus on the 22nd of February from 9 in the morning to 5:30. And it is on Tuesday, Monday the 22nd. I know, poor Stephanie. I was just playing with you, Stephanie. Be sure to come in on Wednesday. No, it's Monday. Monday the 22nd. Stephanie, do you ever get rageful?
Hello?
Yeah.
Rage, I used to in the past when I was younger, every time I broke up our relationship, I used to have a lot of rage. I used to scream in my car until the rage came out, or I used to overeat. That was the way I dealt with it. And yeah, like you said, it's metabolically damaging.
Yeah, you feel how it would wipe you out?
Yeah, it would a lot.
So what would happen to you after a while? Would you just continue being rageful? And
no.
Then what would happen? Would you ever take it to your ex?
No, I would never do that. The rage would go against myself.
You would turn it against yourself. You'd start beating yourself up.
Yes.
Now
yes.
Listen. Dear friend, have you stopped doing that?
Yes.
You don't like to beat yourself up anymore.
No.
Because you found something out.
Yes.
What did you find out?
That it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
That it's more damaging than anything, and there's better things in the world.
So how do you deal with relationships nowadays?
Recently, I broke up with my boyfriend.
You broke up with him, or he broke up with you?
Sort of both ways. I kind of felt like it was going away. The relationship was vanishing.
Yeah.
But then he broke up with me because of some of his family. He's like from a different religion, so they didn't accept me. So basically that was it.
So he broke up with you because he came from a different religion?
Right. And,
oh.
You know,
so what was happening all that time? Oh, his family put pressure on him?
Yes.
I mean, people are just, it gets very confusing how to make all of this work. You know? But you were okay with this one.
I was okay, but I felt cheated and lied because from the beginning I told him, you know you come from a different religion, I'm from a different religion, different backgrounds, but I still want to work this out.
And so then sometimes what they do is they say that, you know, you'll have an excuse. We call this collecting food stamps. And here's the way it works, or green stamps, we used to call it. You find out at the beginning that there's something about the other person that you don't get along with, like they drink, or they have different religion, or they have different habits, or different eating habits. And then you wait, and you get into a relationship, and then only when you get so close do you start pulling those things out, because you're afraid to tell the real truth. So he, instead of saying to you, you know, I don't think we really are getting along, I don't think we have a good relationship, now he says, you know, it's my family
right.
that does it.
Right.
And that's what people do.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, what was your name again?
Paula.
Paula. So Paula, what kind of man are you looking for?
I'm looking for somebody who's professional, just like me. And also, I want somebody maybe from my own religion this time, my own background.
Okay, and what else do you want?
Happiness, just to share happiness and open communication all the time.
So if you find somebody who's depressed.
Oh, actually, he was depressed.
Yeah, okay, that's why I asked you.
Yeah, he was depressed.
So if you meet somebody who's depressed, what is that going to tell you? It's going to tell you that you're not going to have happiness all the time.
Right.
So when you meet somebody this time, Paula, mm-hmm. don't pick somebody who's depressed.
I know that. Now I learned my lesson. I knew he was depressed from the beginning because we were friends for a long time.
And don't pick somebody who drinks too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And don't pick somebody who has to smoke a joint 3 times a day.
Right.
You know what I mean? And don't pick people who are too dedicated to their families.
Yes.
Because in all truth, you know, what we're looking for is love. You should be the highest priority.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling in, Paula.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand Miller. Reminder, tomorrow we talk about the inability to experience joy. Fabulous. Programming at 1 o'clock. It'll be for a full 2 hours, and we will be offering you a special premium, giving you a chance to maybe even come in here. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, hi. My name is Shay, and I'm calling from the Bronx.
Shay.
And I listen to your show all the time, and today I'm listening to it, I was like, oh, I felt very compelled to call. I'm 32 years old, and really, I think I've felt abandonment and rage my entire life. And I find that I somehow end up in relationships that mimic that same kind of feeling of, you know, leaving and abandonment, even if I know that the person's no good for me. I'll stalk. I'll call. I used to. I don't do it as much. I don't do it at all, actually. Anymore.
Oh, wait a minute, then. You're telling me something, Shay. You're telling me as a kid, your father left home.
Well, my parents were never really together.
Right.
My father lived in New York. We lived in Florida. And I remember, I think it was really what my mom used to do was leave me in the house by myself. You know, and so I say, oh, I want to go to the store. No, you just stay here. And I was fine, and I would scream and cry.
Do you remember Shay yearning to be with your father? Wishing you could be in touch with him in some way?
I mean, we were in touch, and I would come to New York during the
school break.
Summer. But, I mean, my father is just kind of he's a great guy. As I'm older, you know, I kind of have relationship with him than I did when I was younger. I don't know if I ever really longed to be with my father, but I found that my brother, whom he and I don't speak at all anymore, he was the person that I think that I felt that longing for. We're 15 years apart.
Uh-huh.
You know, when he would come to New York from when he was in college, you know, I would cry when he walked out the door. I mean, literally fall to pieces and just be so depressed and so devastated.
Very much like the way relationships end for you nowadays?
Yes.
So there's a similarity. Let's think about that for a minute. So if you don't have a father, your brother becomes your substitute father. And your brother becomes the guy that you have the feelings with. And you're yearning to be with him, and you're yearning to be with him because life at home with your mom is kind of miserable, period. So you're yearning for your brother, and you're lonely, and you can't stand that he leaves you. And so you reenact this over and over again in every relationship. Well, there's a theory about it that says the following. It says the part of the reason we recreate our pain over and over again is because we're trying to get better at it. We're trying to get to the point where we don't any longer feel sensitive to it. And it sounds to me like you've been diminishing your rage over time. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah, you're getting better.
And after the my relationship with my son's father, because I also found that I'm recreating all of really my whole, you know, I guess my whole childhood. You know, I have my brother and sister have a different father, and then my daughter and her brother have different fathers, and we all have the same kind of relationship. And after my son's father, which I just had my son in March. And that relationship was just really, it was very painful. I became a lot more numb, and I started to kind of do a lot of introspection. And, of course, I'm a Nichiren Buddhist, so I was doing a lot of chanting about it. And, you know, I felt, I guess part of me always felt like I was to blame for everything.
Yeah.
You know, that my brother and I don't speak anymore. And then my mom has never bothered to, I mean, my brother and I are 15 years apart, like I said, so we never really had a sibling rivalry.
So, let me just finish this with you, Shay.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, somebody feels like they're the broken toy,
right.
That there's something
not
wrong
that
with
toy.
You. Yeah, you're not a broken toy, but you're going to learn this.
And my parents, you know, my mom has never tried to intervene. I've tried to talk to my brother a lot. And
Have you ever talked to a therapist about this?
I did go to therapy. After I had my daughter, I checked myself into a psychiatric unit. Like, literally, I was folding clothes and just had a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, I can't take this anymore. And the problem with that is that I was now even stigmatized even more by my family that, oh, something's wrong with her.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew something was her problem. And nothing is ever their problem. And then even as a Buddhist, like, we're supposed to take responsibility.
But it
seems like nobody ever takes responsibility.
That's a little too much for you to take responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, Shay, I got to get going because I have a lot of other callers.
Okay.
But at some point, you know, you might consider. In fact, listen in tomorrow. Maybe there's an offer there that will give you a special opportunity. Be sure to listen tomorrow when we do our program, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Thank you, Shay. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I felt compelled to call because I wouldn't say I had rage. You know, I was in a situation. It wasn't a full-blown relationship, but it was a friendship. And it was like some kind of betrayal down the line. And I think it was more like betrayal, abandonment, and also feeling kind of embarrassed that, you know, I opened myself up to this person and let this person just straight, you know, get one over on me. So, you know, I didn't want to, you know, do any harm to this, you know, I mean, this particular woman. But, you know, I didn't wish her well. Like, you know, I mean, for a while. Like, I just...
Yeah, okay, so it was kind of a disdain you felt towards her.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just basically, you know, had a disdain. And, you know, I'm the kind of person where, you know, I talk a lot. Like, I get it off my chest. But, you know, this particular situation is kind of, like, made me numb, and I'm not quick to open up. You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like, you know, soon, you know, the minute a woman comes on too strong to me and, you know, they get into me too fast, I push them away. And, you know, I'm like, you know, so sometimes I'm like, wow, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, it's not like I don't want a relationship, but, you know, I said I will never open myself up to get, you know, done like that again. Like, you know, how this particular woman, you know, done me. But,
well, I'll tell you one thing. What's your name?
Oh, Najee.
Najee?
Yeah.
Hi. One of the things I'll say to you about love is, yes, there is a way to be protective about your love, and it's sensible, and you keep your heart somewhat closed, and you never let people that far in, because when you're really fragile and you let people in, they could break things.
Yeah, exactly.
But after a while, you're no longer fragile. And when you're no longer fragile, you let people in, and so they may step on your toe a little bit. They may hurt you a little bit. It doesn't become that big a deal.
Yeah, you know.
Over time, I'm sure you're going to be fine.
Yeah, it's really not that big of a deal. I mean, you know, the wound was healed because, you know, it was funny. You know, me and this particular woman, we didn't, I mean, you know, to add insult to injury.
I got it. Najee, I'm going to have to be going.
Okay, no problem. All right.
Thank you so much. Listen, I'm going to leave you guys with a beautiful piece of Up music. Here's something special. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, with a little Count Basie and Tickle Toe. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Keep yourself tuned in. We're going to learn about how people stop feeling good.
WBAI listeners and sponsors, this is your community radio station. Your involvement is crucial. The time has come once again to support WBAI by raising the necessary funds which allow your favorite host and programs to continue to do increasingly important work that you hear on these airwaves. During fund drives, we ask your support, which keeps the corporations outside of the door and keeps this voice clear, strong, and undiluted. To volunteer, contact Vera at 212-209-2826 or email her at wbaivolunteers@gmail.com. I think it's time to make this drumbeat a little louder. There's no time to lose any longer. WBAI, your community station.
Hi, this is Delphine Blue inviting you to join me every Tuesday night here on WBAI at 99.5 FM for Shocking Blue from 9 until 11 p.m. That's every Tuesday night right here on member-supported WBAI New York at 99.5 FM.
Hi, I'm Earl Caldwell, host of the Caldwell Chronicle on WBAI. We are about to start our winter fundraising drive, and we need your generosity. We know that we have your support. We've always had your support. The proof is that we're marking our 50th anniversary. 50 years is a long time. But that we have come this far, survived this long, and that we are still going strong says in an unmistakable way that we have your support. We must find a way to continue to be in the forefront of the battle for truth and justice. We are counting on you to make this drive special. To volunteer, please call 212-209-2826. We need you to make a powerful statement of what is possible in the struggle to keep free speech radio alive and vibrant all over this great metropolitan area. I'm Earl Caldwell.
Witness Black History at the opening of Artists Speaking for the Spirits, in which 40 activist artists of African ancestry unveil gorgeous mural-sized paintings with proceeds partially benefiting those in need. Enjoy entertainment by trombonist Dick Griffin and vocalist Vivian Ara and her band. It all happens Thursday, February 4th at 6 p.m. at the Arthur Bennett Hall, 22 Chapel Street near J Street in downtown Brooklyn. For info, visit www.artcurian.org. That's A-R-T-C-U-R-I-A-N. urian.org or call 718-260-2909. That's 718-260-2909. See you there.
My ancestors.
You are listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org. Don't forget, tomorrow starts the WBAI Pledge Drive. So I'm sure if you could volunteer and give your time, the radio station would very much appreciate it. All the programs need help, so please call and, you know, come in and answer phones, and don't forget to pledge money. Up next, the WBAI Tuesday Afternoon Arts Magazine.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.